get straight into it. So
let's do it.
So thank you again for allowing us to be here. It's not every day we get to be a part of, or at least see firsthand, top 10, one of the most prestigious programs in the nation, and just overall amazing program. So thank you again for allowing us to come here. Let's start with how you got here, because I feel like that either can be a loaded question or a straightforward question.
I mean, it's a pretty straightforward. I've spent a lot of time here. I was a student here at Harvard. I graduated in 1995, so I was a kid from Ohio.
Okay.
Who, you know, got recruited, took some visits, went to Notre Dame, Northwestern, mm-hmm. UCLA, and picked Harvard. Mm-hmm. I really fell in love with the coach, Dave Fish, and the mm-hmm. school and the community, everything that Harvard stands for in mm-hmm. terms of excellence on and off the court mm-hmm. and in the classroom. And so it was kind of a perfect fit. And mm-hmm. I walked around campus after the first day, I'm like, these are my people. I really get the vibe here. And, mm-hmm. You know, everyone's very hardworking. Everyone's really motivated. You're surrounded by people who have passion and that are pursuing it at the highest level, whether, you know, that was when I was here, Matt Damon was a student here, mm-hmm. or, you know, somebody else was a, you know, famous violinist, and somebody else was a, you know, famous jazz musician.
Yeah.
And so it really was, you know, a great fit for me. So I came here and played professionally for about 4 years mm-hmm. on tour, was a, you know, good doubles player and traveled all over and mm-hmm. got a chance to really see the next level and get a window into that. And then I came back, actually went to grad school for a couple of years mm-hmm. and sort of was trying, I wanted a little time away from tennis because mm-hmm. I'd sort of been my life and was really happy to have a break. And then a volunteer spot opened up and I sort of helped while I was in grad school and then moved into full time kind of as an assistant. And that was, I don't know, probably 17 years ago now or 18 years. So it's been a while.
It's been a while, but at the same time, you've grown this program to continue to shine and to really just put a stamp on Division I tennis, not only on the court but off the court as well, and that we've learned that in the past two interviews we've done. So for you, when you first started coaching, what was your philosophy like as a coach, and how has it changed over the years?
Well, geez. Well, I mean, you know, 17, 18 years ago when I first did the coaching business, I mean, you know, you're a sponge. You're trying to learn as much as possible. I definitely think that the playing and playing on the pro circuit was helpful to some degree, but then, you know, and that sort of experience and exposure does help build mm-hmm. up your sort of knowledge base. But coaching's a different ball game than playing, and it really did take me some time to make the shift and really understand, you know, what's involved, and then being able to be a coach that can really work with each individual player from their game and where mm-hmm. they come from, instead of sort of putting my stamp on it and saying this is how you have to play, really sort of making sure everything was tailored to the player's game and what they needed. So I definitely think I had to learn a lot mm-hmm. in those years, and I definitely spoke with a lot of great coaches, took a lot of notes, had a big coaching journal, read a lot of books, and it really helped me sort of get up to speed, you know, and seeing there. So in terms of coaching philosophy, I mean,
today's video is sponsored by the Universal Tennis Power Subscription Service, which allows you to see every decimal of someone's UTR rating when you're playing them to get a better understanding of where they are in terms of level. The Power Subscription is not just for looking at numbers. It's also for great discounts on amazing companies like Fabletics, like Tennis Warehouse, and many other companies. Now, you can check them out using the link in the description below.
Certainly, you know, you want to meet the player and get mm-hmm. to understand them as mm-hmm. a person, and build the trust.
Yeah.
And, you know, tennis, certainly the big emphasis certainly for us has been on tennis as a movement game.
Yeah.
And sort of speed, stability, strength. You can't spend enough time doing that kind of work.
Yeah.
You see that the best players in the world are the best movers.
Yeah.
And so how do we help coach that, or how do we improve that? And if you can get a little bit better, you know, week after week, year after year, especially these 18-year-olds coming in, you know, their bodies are changing and you can really build them up. So we've invested a lot in terms of their movement. We've mm-hmm. invested a lot in the mental game.
Yeah.
We have a wonderful, you know, mental coach that we work with as well.
Fantastic.
That really helps build consistency and mm-hmm. performance. And then, you know, certainly, you know, helping players understand their game identity and, mm-hmm. and what gives them the best chance to win. What are the patterns that they need to play to give themselves the best, you know, chance? So, you know, probably those three things have been a focus for me.
And you touched on it. I like how you said you're just a sponge at the beginning and mm-hmm. learning from other past coaches and learning from your peers. Is was there a common theme that you've learned from them, or was there one piece that all the coaches said to you that would help you in the future?
Usually you're picking up little bits and pieces. You're getting mm-hmm. windows into, you know, their thinking. You know, it might be a recruiting tip from one coach. You can see a culture fit from somebody like a Brian Shelton and what he does with mm-hmm. his program, and talking with other sort of mentors and other people and seeing how they do it. I think, you know, that's the beauty of this game. There's lots of different ways to do this. I mm-hmm. think there's different styles, even in coaching. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you see what, you know, the Peter Smiths and the Brian Bolins did in terms of building those powerhouses and building that community. Mm-hmm. So I think you just picked little bits here and there, and and that we call that R&D. You replicate and duplicate what other people are doing. You don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Okay. So for you, because I was about to ask, how do you keep a program so consistent? How do you keep it so successful year after year and develop the kind of a different mentality, but also the same mentality as well, to have the best result every single season?
I mean, it's just a lot of hard work and good recruiting. It really comes down to the players and their buy-in. I certainly think that we strive to help have our students really take ownership of this process. Mm-hmm. And when people take ownership in it and they sort of make it their own, I think they're more invested. Mm-hmm. And that's been, you know, very helpful. I think so we're really constantly putting more on their plates and having mm-hmm. them build up their sort of muscles. And so that's one of it. I think it's, you know, certainly recruiting is important. I think certainly a place like Harvard, you know, is a great fit, you know, with a great school and a great program. So, you know, we're trying to attract those top players. And then people see our students getting better. And I think that, you know, that's also helps in the recruiting process, is knowing that players are advancing and they're really being able to accomplish their goals and dreams here mm-hmm. at Harvard.
Yeah, and I was with that recruiting process as well. Is it easier or harder to recruit at a place like this?
I think it's both easier and harder, because it's harder just because there's the pool of applicants that you're looking at is very small.
Yes.
That can do the tennis at a top, you know, 10, top 15 level, and being able to be a student here at Harvard and really embrace that and get the most out of it. So you're looking at a small pool.
Yeah.
I certainly think in that pool, you know, we've been quite successful, and that sort of is
absolutely
our target, you know, sort of the bullseye there. But it's small, and I think more and more players now are sort of, you know, as juniors, lured to pro tennis, and then some players are now, you know, downshifting in their education as young mm-hmm. kids, and so, you know, that probably makes the pool a little bit smaller.
You!
Please subscribe.
Thanks.
For you, when you recruit someone and you want them to stay there for 4 years, do you buy into the 4 years at one school, or do you tell them you can stay for as long as you want?
I mean, this has not really been much. I don't think it's been as big an issue in college tennis. I mean, mm-hmm. there's been, you know, Ethan Quinn wins the NCAAs, he goes pro.
Yeah.
James Blake was the number one player in college tennis. He was here at Harvard, he went pro. And so I don't think that's, you know, most of the college mm-hmm. tennis players out there. You know, if you start winning challengers, you're moving up the rankings there. You did what Ben Shelton did.
Yeah.
You know, it's clear when you're sort of ready for that next leap. So that, I don't think that's as big a thing in college basketball, where everybody's one and done. I think here, you know, you get an opportunity to grow and keep going. And then if the results are there and you're, you know, you're mm-hmm. you're showing that you're tour ready, I think that, you know, a few of the top players are turning pro, but they're also making us proud on the circuit. I mean, all those players have done super well.
So do you think players, if players have that potential right out of high school or whenever they're done with their academics, do you think they should go to college and do their 4 years and try it? Or do you think, well, I feel like your answer is pretty straightforward
with
this,
I mean,
but do you think that there's, it's better to go to college and develop for 4 years, or do you think it's they should try it?
Everybody's got their own timetable and their own thing. So, I mean, listen, at the top of the top, I mean, you know, if you're, you know, winning rounds on the tour, you know, and you're top 200, you're ready.
Yeah.
You know? So I think some of this is just, you know, based on it's a results business, and you know, your results tell you where your level is. You
exactly.
know, there's no hiding from it. You know, mm-hmm. you know, if you're that. So that's usually the biggest determinant.
Yeah. And for you on the court as well, if we get into your on coaching mm-hmm. with your guys, how do you like to approach each player on the court, or what's your coaching style once you're on the court during a match?
I mean, we've developed the language over the course of the year, the coaches and the players, they're coming up, they're also involved in that process and sort of what they need to remind themselves, what are their key phrases, what are their, you know, key shot patterns. And mm-hmm. it's often just reminding players of what's working, what's not. Every once in a while, you know, they get a little lost in the match and you're sort of reorienting them. Oh, hey, listen, you know, that wide serve, mm-hmm. you know, he's serving and volleying on your wide serve if you're chipping the forehand or whatever. You know, there's tactical sort of reminders. But mostly on court on match day, I mean, hopefully you've done the work, right?
Yeah.
And you've built up that vocabulary and the trust. And it's often just reminding people to get sort of back on route, mm-hmm. you know, so... You know, that's, we're not like every point calling plays out because I think, you know, if you also want to get ready for the next step, you know, you've got to be able to sort of put the points together. But we're there, you know, to help and, mm-hmm. and to monitor.
Yeah. And as when you develop that problem solving kind of equation for them, does it take long, or like you said, it takes a couple of years to kind of develop your own language with your own players when they first get here? What's that transition period like for you as a coach or as a mentor to some of these guys?
It takes a lot of conversations, mm-hmm. you know, offline conversations, talking with their junior coaches and understanding what is, you know, their makeup, how do they respond, what kind of learner are they, what kind of students are they, and then asking them, you know, it does take time. You just don't walk in and all of a sudden, you know, have the lexicon that works with each
and it just
player.
Works.
Yeah. No, you build it up, and that's why, you know, the juniors and seniors tend to really perform really well, because you've just developed that language. It's more seamless, and mm-hmm. in the beginning, it takes time.
Well, I asked two of your players this, and maybe you'll have one off the top of your head, but is there a Rubenism, I would like to call it, that you like to say on the court or to your guys all the time? Is there like a phrase or like a common saying or action that you do towards the guys every day?
Ah, geez. I mean, it depends on what we're working on. I mean, they know in our, we you know, we speak a lot through what we do with our drills and how we, you know, put practices together. I really think it's specific to each of the players.
Okay.
You know, I'm big on, you know, working on the volleys and coming forward. In terms of any specific sayings or phrases, most of the time it's, you know, you've been, you know, trust what you've been working on. You've been here before. You know what to do.
Okay.
And just reminding them of all the work that they've put in, mm-hmm. and to just withdraw that, you know, here on match day. I just think big speeches and lots of, like, you know, overcoaching in terms of, in match day, I think is not as effective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's a couple things that each player probably we repeat.
Danny said you had good one-liners that you like to say.
Oh, jeez, I don't know. Maybe they come to me. I don't have any off the top of my head. It's sort of, I don't know.
Well,
that's a good question.
Well, Ronan also said that he liked one of the things that you said with life is not just a straight line on a graph. It's not just straightforward. It's there's a lot of peaks and valleys, and there's a lot of learning along the way. And for you, what's one of the things from that you tell your guys about being a mentor?
Well, we talk about this in the beginning of the year. That's one of the first things we show them. And, you know, it's not, life does not go in a straight line, and there's mm-hmm. going to be setbacks. And I think it's just setting expectations are really important, mm-hmm. and recognizing how hard this is, how many good teams there are.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's been, you know, just the quality of college tennis is so good. And so you want to, you know, make sure they're understanding that this is, you know, this is hard.
Yeah.
And I think we do talk about that a lot. Mm-hmm. We always, that's the one-liner. When is it easy?
Never.
Yeah.
Yep. Danny did say that. That was the one that he said too.
That one we do over and over again. It's up on the walls usually.
I love that.
And just reminding them that this is such a process. And I think when you just stick with that, and you know, you layer on good practice after good practice, year after year, mm-hmm. you start leveling up, and then you know you buy in because you're improving and it's working. And so that's sort of, you know, how you build the confidence in the game and in the coaching staff and as a team.
So if you were to give a piece of advice to kids that are trying to get recruited, that are trying to get to a program like this, not just academically, but tennis-wise as well, what's one piece of advice you have given a parent or that you would give parents that are currently in this process?
Well, I mean, I would give the advice probably to the kids, but mostly the parents. I think for the parents, it's you know, the more that you can put the responsibility on the young person and the better.
Okay.
As you learn to grow and you take ownership of this process, that's when the magic happens.
Yeah.
And the parents should be, you know, hopefully, you know, the coach is directing the show and the parents are helping. It does take a whole family. I mean, we can't pretend like it doesn't. Certainly tennis requires the travel, it's resources, it's, you know, it's 6-7 days a week. You know, there's no holidays because you're always going off to the tournaments, you know, when school's out of session. So it does take that dedication from parents, but hopefully, you know, the young, you know, boy or girl can really make it their own and you know, those are the kids that usually are the ones that, you know, stand out and tend to really get better. If you're sort of waiting for the coach and your parents to tell you what to do, you know, you lose a little agency in that. We find that the kids that are really, that sort of grab hold of it, we talk a lot about finding your mission.
Yeah.
And I would say that would be my advice. Make you know, find your meaning in this, find your mission, and then really just lean in to figuring out how you can get better. And once you sort of get that curiosity, once you have the drive, you know, the world will be there to meet you.
So that self-sufficiency is kind of a big selling point when either a player introduces them to you or they reach out.
They take a lot of responsibility and accountability for their game.
Okay.
And they take ownership. And those are huge. Those are probably the number one thing I would say is the determinant of your success. There's a lot of different body types, there's a lot of different game styles, but that's the through line with really successful people that we see here is people that really just, you know, grab a hold of an idea or their tennis game and they're not going to let go and they want to get better. And then they find ways, you know. So I think motivation and those things are key. Now, I think you can develop that to some degree, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the more you open yourself up to it, I think that's the engine that drives this.
And for you too, as a recruit, if they were to send you, and just off the top of my head, if they send you a video, like a recruiting video, what's the number one thing that stands out to you as a coach? What would be, okay, I'm interested. What's the catching point?
I think everyone's different. You want to, I mean, listen, you're looking at your level, you're looking at what your, you know, your rating is, you know, you're looking at those things. You're looking at the scores, how close, you know, what do your matches look like? Are you a problem solver? How do you do in 3-set matches? Mm-hmm. You're looking at, you know, you're looking at some technical, you're looking at movement. I mean, I'm certainly looking at, can you move? Do you have wheels? Well, that's harder to coach. So you want to hopefully have a good engine there.
If you're just really fast, you fit in on this team.
I mean, anywhere, you know, and that helps. You're looking at, you know, you're checking a couple of buckets. Most of the time you're trying to just like, you're putting them in buckets, right?
Yeah.
Coaches, we work in buckets. Like, oh, this is my top tier level recruit. This is a middle one. And this is probably a lower level. This is probably a long shot. And so in the beginning, you're just doing very basic, you know, sort of categorizing. So you're not thin slicing it at that point.
Yeah.
You know, you're just seeing where the results are, where their level is. And you know, the levels are going up and down, you know, week to week, even on our team. So you don't want to make big pronouncements, but you're trying to figure out where they fit.
Okay.
So most of the time you're sort of, yeah, maybe you watch a video and there's a couple things that concern you. And, you know, okay, that's maybe one pile or this thing. Look, this looks really good. We'll put them here. Let's keep looking. But, you know, those are usually just sort of a first blush assessment.
Okay. So you kind of look more in depth of, once you start looking at the results, not just the video.
Results over time.
Yeah.
Results, you know, the video, I mean, you know, we'll look at that, but it's not usually the defining thing we're doing.
Of course. Yeah. And
you want to see people in person, you want to see them play as well, and so you got to use all those.
So what's been, in your opinion, with the NIL, with the transfer portal, has that changed your perspective on coaching, or has that changed the shape of college tennis? Because it definitely has in the big sports, with, not saying tennis isn't big, but with basketball, with football, with all that going on, has that changed the outlook of how people are recruited now in the world of college tennis?
I mean, I think it's coming, it's happening, so it's certainly a factor. I still think, you know, people want a great school, they want good coaches, they want a good community, they want to get better. That's still the driver. You know, money's, and in terms of NILs, are coming, so you know, that's I can't pretend that that's not there.
It's not a reality.
I think the players that are interested here are looking at, okay, you know, what's my, you know, we talk about Harvard not being a four-year decision, but a 40-year decision, because it can shape and change your life.
I like that.
And so those are the kind of people that are drawn to us in our program.
And for you too, if you were, because you've already made a staple, you've already kind of, you've established yourself here for so long, you've done so well, had success, what would be considered a successful career to you here at Harvard? Because people measure success very differently. How do you define success?
I think it's, we all know as coaches sort of what kind of talent you have to start, and then do you advance the ball, do you get them better, where do they end up? You know, it's nice making the NCAA tournament, it's nice doing well, it's nice being in the top 20, but, you know, every year is a little different. And, you know, I think we're really proud of just the kids are coming, they're invested, they're getting better, they're accomplishing a lot. And, you know, most of it's just sort of dependent on, you know, where the students and their level is.
Yeah.
So I've had years where we haven't done that well, and I felt like it's been some of our best coaching.
Okay.
And really maybe some of the most seasons I'm most proud of. So, as a coach, every year is a little bit different, and it is, you know, it's always changing. That's what's so exciting, and that's maybe what's also maybe gives me some gray hairs. But every year is different, and it's definitely, you know, demands a lot of you, which is kind of the big challenge, and what makes it what's so exciting.
It makes it more fun.
And it's just, there's so many good teams. So on that level, we've seen, you know, you don't have a good day, you lose. So it's really been, college tennis couldn't be in a better spot, I think, in terms of both the competitiveness. I think a healthy ecosystem is just, you know, players and upsets and parity, which I think is happening in college tennis. And then you've got also the success of college players going on the pro tour, which has been remarkable. So in some ways, you know, this is probably a golden era again for college tennis.
Did you see yourself, if you were to look back, did you see yourself doing this?
No.
For the longevity
of time?
No,
I didn't even think I wanted to be a coach.
Really?
I thought I wanted to be a teacher, you know.
Okay.
So I thought,
for
was,
what type of class?
I don't know, maybe an English teacher or something at one point. But I mean, I played so much tennis that I just needed to get away from it. So it was like the last thing, I'm like, oh my gosh, now I'm going to go to the courts again. So I took 4 years, you know, in grad school to just get away, which I needed. And now it's actually kind of a perfect fit. I was actually a psychology major here at Harvard, and it's, you know, I feel like I use that every day.
Love
in
that.
Terms of like, you know, that's an important part of the coaching business. And so I don't know if this life sort of has a way of working out. And I think coaching really pulls and draws on a lot of parts of myself that you know, I get to use, and I think it's really fun and challenging.
I love that. And if you were to say for this to be a successful season, what would that be? Already is.
Yeah, I mean, it is a successful season, and then to see how far we can take it, and we'll see where you know, the season goes from here. But we're definitely, players are building, they're playing some of their best tennis. You know, that's what you want by May. You know, hopefully you're peaking in May, and you know, we're going to be excited to be in the tournament and try to make a run.
I can't wait. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, Coach.
All right.
Thank you.
No, thank you.